Pacific Beer Chat records on the traditional unceded territory of the Coast Salish First Nations, including the Tsleil-Waututh, the Keetse, the Kwantlen, the Kwikwetlem, the Matsqui, the Musqueam, the Kakite, the Semiahu, the Squamish, the Tsawwassen, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Stalo First Nations.
Welcome to Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Mike.
I'm Warren.
I'm Jordan.
And I'm Gary from Barnell Brewing in Kelowna, British Columbia.
Nice. Perfect. Well, just to start it out, where is the brewery located in Kelowna?
So brewery district, if there is one forming, it kind of is in Kelowna, is on the north end of town. And we're at the south end of town, down Lakeshore in really a residential neighborhood, which is what we wanted. We wanted to be sort of brewery slash pub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Neighborhood pub, and there was nothing. It was so underserviced in that neighborhood. So we're down Lakeshore Road just before you head up into the hills of wine country.
Wow.
And yeah, it's not that far of a walk to the lake either.
No, you're less than a 5-minute walk down to the lake.
Nice.
Yeah, you can't complain about the location at all, because so often it's just kind of shoved off in the middle of nowhere in a commercial district or whatever. So to be that sort of neighborhood pub is great.
Well, it's right on a developing little business district. Just it's sort of got a community feel with a, you know, grocery store, a couple of pizza places, sushi place, little boutique stores.
Okay.
And then it's on a traffic circle. So even if you miss it, you just keep riding around, around, you come right around to the parking lot again. So.
Yeah, for sure. And then the Mission neighborhood of Kelowna is also, you know, a little more expensive houses and stuff, so it's not a bad place to be either. There's a little more money there.
It's when we looked at it, there was that, but there's also our lease is way more than we would like to pay anywhere else in town.
So
there's
the flip side of it.
There's the other side of that as well. So
that's a damn desirable neighborhood.
But it's also where all the building has gone in Kelowna for so long now. There's the population base of that neighborhood has just blown up.
And don't worry, because if it's not high lease, it will be the next time up, because everyone wants to be there, and suddenly it's desirable. And look at East Van.
That's true. See, I haven't been up to Kelowna in a few years now, but I'm used to looking for breweries up, the north end of the town where
downtown, basically,
where Granville Brewing is and where Tree used to be and all that, right?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, and that even this year, there'll be probably three more that are opening right in that area.
Wow.
You know, you roll back 2 years, you're minus probably 5-6 of us that have just come around in the last 2 years. So it's, again, maybe for some of us, not the best time to be starting.
It's not the best time.
We had a good solid, we started in July 6th before COVID. Yeah. So we had a few solid months before we went to off sales only, which was a good thing for us.
Yeah.
And then this summer was actually better than we had hoped, but Kelowna's a tourist town, so we had a lot of traffic.
Well, summers are when you're making your money at a brewery anyways.
Usually, yeah.
Absolutely. And certainly not as much as last summer, but we also didn't have to babysit people. There's a lot of places in Kelowna that, especially downtown in the north end, they were babysitting people. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to, you want people to be there, but you don't want to have to police them.
For sure.
No kidding.
Then downtown is where the nightclubs would be and everything, so people that can't go to those because they're not open, they're looking for somewhere to party, and you just can't.
No, that's been the really big discussion on places all over, obviously, and the pushback now on times closing earlier, and I get it, but it's hard to do business.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. This 10 p.m. thing is killing us, because we were one of the only places, one of the only breweries in Port Moody that was open till 1, right? Most of the places on Brewers Row, they were already closed at 10, so this doesn't really affect them much, but we're feeling it for sure.
Well, and that's one of the probably attractive things of being able to be open late.
Yeah.
So, you know, people could go to those other places and still go to your place.
Exactly. And so, yeah, we're missing that traffic now, and we're feeling it.
Yeah. One of the things we like about our neighborhood, too, is that, you know, after supper most days, unless you're a true craft beer enthusiast, you're not driving that far down into the Mission. So it's really, that's where, you know, people are riding their bikes or walking with their dog. They're coming down with their family. They're sitting up in the loft and having a few, and which is really what we want it to be.
So yeah, for sure.
More of a neighborhood destination.
Yeah.
It's got a great vibe, too, from what I've seen. I can't wait to make my way out there.
I keep inviting you.
I keep on promising I'm going to come. So when this COVID dies down, I'm definitely going to do it.
I keep bringing you crawlers. I keep giving you beer.
We're gonna have
there a couple times. Jeez.
You travel for work, in fairness.
And in-laws are there. So. And they're, you know, multiple times every summer.
Yeah, I just have Gary and Barnowell up there, so I guess I should make an excuse. Well, should we crack a beer, guys?
I think that would be a good idea. All right, grab some here. Cool. Here, I'll give you guys a choice of what we're starting with.
Oh, tonight. Here we go.
We're gonna. Would you want to start with a little Mission Creek Cherry Sour?
Ooh.
then we're gonna go. We've got an Arlo's Honey Brown in there, which real honey from just up the hill from the barn. We've got probably one of our most popular consistent beers since we've started. Don't Give a Hoot Pale Ale.
I've had that.
And then we, yes, you have.
It's good.
And then just released last week for only the second time. We did it last winter, but it's our Nutty Owl. It's vanilla chestnut ale.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
So that's more dessertish. I'd probably push that probably one near the end.
Finish with that one, yeah.
But on the other ones, you guys can take your
pick.
Let's
start with the lowest IBU then, probably the sour, right?
Yes, you got her. Let me grab it.
Let's do it.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice big 32-ounce crowler you heard cracked there.
Oh, thank
you. The real deal.
I love the size of those things because they look like a real beer when you hold them in your hand.
Oh, yeah.
We should get some napkins just in case. Those things pour really hard.
Yeah.
I'll grab a couple.
I think we have a pro here because I don't think I've seen a drop spilled yet.
Look at mine compared to Warren's. Mine's all head.
Yeah, I think he's done this before.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think I've ever poured one of those successfully. They always spill.
The color on this is amazing. That is beautiful. It's nice and bright and clear, but it's got this amazing red hue to it with a nice pink head. The head's nice. It's a nice, thick head. And wow, that color is amazing.
Too. You really get the cherries, like the tartness of it coming off the nose.
So what kind of cherries went in this?
So this is British Columbia cherries.
Grown in the Okanagan.
They were. Yeah. processed in the West Coast. This is a kettle sour. So our brewer spent time in Belgium. Really loved the creek experience in terms of the K-R-I-E-K creek.
Yeah.
And with the sour cherries. But this is sort of his take on bringing it home to Canada. So Mission Creek Cherry Sour. We have a Mission Creek that runs right by the brewery, pretty much. And then the cherries are BC cherries. And
just like sort Bing of a, cherries or whatever?
It's actually a variety of cherries.
Oh, yep. A mix.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then you get the color and the flavor coming off there.
It's beauty.
So. It's got a nice nose, but it's not overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
And what one of the things we really love about our brewer is, he's young. He came from Swans. He sort of
A lot of people have been through there.
What's his name?
Andrew?
Colin Pistaka.
Oh. Okay.
So Colin was following in the footsteps of his dad, going to be a doctor, and got his biochem degree, and then decided he liked beer way more.
Yeah.
And started brewing there and really cut his teeth for 3 years and then wanted to come home. And he had the same vision as we did to really create a wide palette of beers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The biggest compliment, he says, is when somebody comes in that says, I'm not sure I'm a beer drinker, and leaves liking one or two or three of his beers.
Yes.
So this is one of the ones, certainly in the summer, that we couldn't keep in. It just kept.
I could see this going quickly in the summer.
Yeah, it's really a summery beer.
Yeah.
We're in the tail end of ours right now. We're going to brew one more batch of it just because people are still filling their growlers. It's like toilet paper, just preparing for a little shutdown here again.
I love sours all year long, too. It's not just a summer thing for me. But this one's nice. It's not sour. It's more like tart with the cherry flavor in there.
Yeah, it's definitely tart, but it's not burning. It's not like that sour. And you can taste the cherries, but it's not overpowering in any way. The cherries are there in balance with the beer.
Mm-hmm. The some people almost think it's ciderish, except for the fact that it's certainly beer-based. But the attractiveness, I think, is it is not – even for sour haters, they can drink this.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Super palatable.
So it's refreshing.
For a while there, all the kettle sours on the market were just like gut rot, like so strong, sour.
Give you heartburn.
Yeah. Like this – you could drink – tons of this and not get heartburn, which is nice, especially because I had heartburn earlier today.
Now, one of you is not a kettle sour lover.
That would be Warren. We're slowly winning him over.
I've had a few that I've really enjoyed. That last one that we had at Strange Fellas, the Hedgerow.
Oh, yeah.
Canadian Metal winner, but it was darn good. I really enjoyed that one.
Well, you liked your black backcountry there, too.
There's a few, yeah. There's a few here and there that I'll
the key lime. I heard you guys talking about the key lime.
Yeah, that was good. I really like this one. I think I could actually finish the whole crowler and not be worried about any like heartburn or anything like that. It's that nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really enjoying this one.
You don't even have to be kind to me. You can be totally brutally honest on all these tonight.
I could see this being the beer that the non-beer drinker could drink quite easily because it is. You're right. It reminds you more of a cider or something like that.
We were surprised how many people were taking it out in Crowlers and Growlers this summer. It was the boat beer. It was the deck beer. It was the barbecue, have your friends over kind of thing.
What's the percentage on this?
I was just going to say that.
This one is a 5.5er.
Okay. That's pretty
decent. Yeah.
Nice. You know, not considered a session ale, but I would definitely say that's a sessionable beer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. Because I don't drink a lot of session beers. Yeah.
It's going down quick, I'll say that much.
Yeah, this is really nice. The cherry is nicely balanced. It's not, you know, and I've had cherry ones where it kind of reminds you of cough syrup almost, that fake kind of cherry flavor, and I don't get even a hint of that in this.
Yeah, you don't want that.
That's not the flavor you're going after.
No, and it doesn't have that weird, some kettle sours have that weird finishing taste. Like, yeah. I don't know, I've never figured out how to describe it, but this is just cherry smoothness all the way through.
Yeah.
I don't get anything.
Yeah. It's not super complex, so it's not challenging.
No.
Yeah.
Not getting much grain on it. Like, there's a hint. But, yeah, that's probably why they think it's more like a cider.
And you don't really pick up the hops either.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's got, obviously, a very low IBU, and it's...
like 5, 7?
Yeah, it's about a 7, I think. Yeah. That the beautiful thing about this is I love the color of it.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. I love having, you know, it's when people come in for their tasting flights, and they can get... every color in the rainbow kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then they pick, you know, they'll pick what they want to move to. But that the nice thing about this beer is that people that don't even like sours will like it.
Yeah. You know what the color actually almost reminds me of is cherry Kool-Aid, to be honest with you, from like when you had as a kid. It's like, it's clear. It's not super see-through, but it's got that just perfect red color. I love it.
The whole crowler game for us has been a lifesaver in COVID. I was actually down at the coast for BC Breweries Guild last fall, October, and was at House of Funk.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a little picture over there. House of Funk, the night that they were putting in their new crowler machine.
Oh, yeah.
And so Ma 37 was there. They were putting it in, and we had a little chat. And then the next night, he chatted me up at BC Breweries Guild. And we thought, you know, it would probably be for us. We got a very small system. Like, we are a... We are 4-in-1 tank system because we have a very small brew space in a 1920s heritage barn.
Oh, wow.
So when we became the proud recipients of that barn with a dirt floor and just a loft, we were like, how are we gonna produce enough beer to even serve our house in here?
Yeah.
It became a challenge. So we actually went with a 4-in-1 vessel system in this number one production facility. It's not our long-term plan for the game, but right now. It's an amazing job. Our brewer has dialed it in. He had to learn a few things going from the 4-vessel system to this.
Sounds more like a giant brew in a bag kind of thing.
Well, you know, it is. I mean, you got the big gantry. You were dropping the big mash tun right into your tank, and it does everything. So
crazy.
And people watch. They can stand right in the loft area, watch the brew going on, watch the grain being dropped down in.
That's cool.
And so it is. It's kind of an experience, which is, you know, the three of us that own Barnow was for us what we wanted. We our favorite craft breweries weren't just about the beer; they were good beers, but it was also about the experience. You know, every place in Moodyro has something different about it, right?
Oh, yeah. They all have their personality,
totally. Fieldhouse was one of our favorites whenever we made a trip to just the experience of it. You know, you got the beer lawn out in front, you got the vibe inside.
Yep. Yeah, wood fireplace.
Yeah. Well, the first time I was introduced to it on Instagram, I was like, that place is out in the country somewhere. And then you get there and you're like in the, you know, Railroad Avenue.
Yeah, right by the beginning of
one
industrial
little parcel
park.
Of grass. Yeah. Have you guys been out to the new Fieldhouse yet?
No, not yet.
No, one of our Cam's been there. Our editor's been out there.
He lives out that way, though.
Yeah, he's
the food looked pretty good.
But I have tried, what's the other one out there? Barnside? What is the new one out there?
Barnside is out in
that's in Delta.
No, what's the other barn one that just Barnyard? Is that what it's called?
God, I don't know. I can't keep
up. There's another new one out there, and I just had one of their IPAs. My buddy went out there and brought it back, and it was pretty good. It's they use coriander, which just gives it a little bit of different
Barnside?
Flavor, but it's great.
Barnside,
it's some, barn something. I didn't should have researched. I didn't know we were going to talk about it.
Someone's yelling at you right now.
Yeah, you got it. You'll have it figured out by then.
Yeah.
Anyway, just to finish the crowler discussion. So when from we got our machine, our crowler machine on like December 24th. And I think from then till the beginning of shutdown at COVID, we'd maybe moved 200 crowlers. Like it was just sort of a
novelty.
Yeah, little thing. But when shutdown happened and all you got is growlers and crowlers, we made a few trips down to mile 37 and picked up some crowlers because we were moving a lot of crowlers, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
I remember you showing up at the, you stopped by my house one day and you had the big trailer just to load all the cans up. Just a trip for cans.
Well, we couldn't wait. Well, the beauty thing is if you come down, then you can make other stops, you know. We could have paid to have them ship, but it's way more fun to come down.
So a lot of people have had to make the shift from crowlers or growlers only. Or tasting room only, they've had to make that shift to packaging to survive the COVID situation. So, like, for instance, the one example that comes right off top of my head is Storm Brewing is putting beer in cans now, for God's sake.
And not just their regulars now. I saw they're starting to do some of their...
all those Storm...
What do they call them again? Brainstorms. They're going into cans now, too.
Yeah. Well, they just released that Fresh Hop one, though.
Yeah.
So that's a big shift. I mean, James was resisting cans for years.
Well, resisting package in general.
In general. He did growlers, but that was it.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. So are they, do you know, or do they have their own canning line? They bring somebody in? What are they
doing?
Not sure.
That would be mobile, I'm sure. There's no room in that place.
I was just talking to my friend Damone on Sunday when we were judging for Van Brewers, and he told me that him and a buddy of his picked up a canning line from someone out in the valley who was upgrading, and they got a smoking deal on it, and they just put it away because they knew it would come in handy. And I think that might be the canning line that Storm's using.
Interesting.
So I think James might have actually bought it from them.
Oh, wow.
And that's a problem for us. I mean, in terms of our we've got six hectoliter tanks, so we're not, you know, canning isn't really an option at this point with that kind of production. We primarily wanted to service our house, so maybe phase two. Yeah. If we get there.
So your brewing system is, how much beer do you make at a time?
So all the cans are going all the time. So we can basically have 3,600 liters of beer going, and we just turn those.
So each of your tanks is 600 liters?
Yeah.
So you got a six heck.
It's a system. Nano system then, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a 4-in-1 nano system. Wow. It's they're actually called 7 heck tanks, but you're only getting 6.
Yeah, you need that headspace.
In there. And then we're right into kegs from there, right into the cooler, and then rolling it over the next day into new brew. So
you guys brewing every day?
Pretty much, yeah. Once it's empty, it's rolling over.
Mm-hmm.
So, and which is one of the reasons, you know, I think Brewha did a little special on us. That's the system we're using. But they were like, how do you keep 15 of your own brews?
Must have a big cooler.
On top, but it is a pretty big cooler. Yeah. Plus, we have a really good partnership with the Central Okanagan Food Bank. So early on, they came to us and they were like, the number one thing they throw out at food banks, unbeknownst to all of us, was whole grain bread.
Hmm. Okay.
So
it spoils so quickly?
It spoils fast. It's not their number one seller off the shelf.
Of course.
Yeah. And so they did a little research. And in Europe, a lot of breweries were taking those type of loaves and using it for partial grain into their
Moon beers. Underwater did one a year or two back that was made with bread from a local bakery.
So we said, let us get up and going first. We're very open to the idea. So we got first few brews out of the way and we're selling fine. And Colin went into our test tank. Colin's our brewer. He went and got some of the bread and tried it in our test tank, and it came up way better than we thought it was.
Yeah,
done. And so we keep breaking bread, and is our amber ale, and we give $1 a pint back to the food bank, but they also give us cooler space. So when we run out of keg space, they're licensed to hold some of our brew over there, which has been a great partnership for us.
They get
basically $1,000 for every tank that we go through of our breaking bread.
Awesome.
So, and they can get a lot more out of that money than you can too at the store, right?
Absolutely. What they can do with that $1,000 is amazing. So,
yeah.
So I think we're into third batch of breaking bread, and it's all different because the breads are different.
Sure.
So it's going to taste a little bit
different.
It'd
be nice when you get some rye bread in there.
We did. This last one had quite a bit of rye in it, so it was,
And that makes it really easier, too, because the rye bread won't gum up probably like rye does in your mash.
But that's funny because that's actually a very historical way of making beer. That's the way the Egyptians did it. They would bake a loaf of bread first, and then they would use the bread to make their beer. Mm. So, I mean, that's full circle. That's going back to the olden days.
Well, and I think, you know, I would say that there's probably a market in every city for breweries to find that kind of community partnership with their food bank and say, you know, once off a year, we're gonna throw a bread brew down and give some money back to the food bank.
But, why not? Saves money on ingredients, and at the end of the day, it's keeping it out of a landfill.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun for the brewer because it's gonna come out different every time.
Yeah. So. I love that idea.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, you heard it here first then. Way to go, Gary.
Yeah, so go buy some breaking bread and support your local community.
There you go.
Right on.
Okay, well, that's number one down.
Crack number two.
Okay, where are we moving? Are we going to Arlo's Honey Brown?
Sure. Yeah, might as well, because the pale ale will be probably a little more bitter.
Yeah, it actually, our pale comes off more like an IPA.
There you go,
American style. But the Arlo's Honey Brown has a history too, so... A couple of our employees used to work up the hill at Arlo's Honey Farm and thought it was a neat combination to partner again with another local. And so we put basically 10 kilograms of Arlo's honey in every one of those tanks.
Damn.
And then the malt has got some honey in it as well. So we got from Armstrong from Gambinas in Armstrong. And then we get this little brown beer. Here comes.
Beauty.
It's nice, too, because, again, that's pretty darn local to Kelowna.
Yeah.
It's not right there, but it's pretty darn close.
It's pretty close, yeah. It's just up by Vernon, so it's not too far of a drive. You ever been up to Gambrinus Malting?
I have not. But they're in our place regularly, so they're...
Years ago, like probably 10, 15 years ago, I went on a bit of a tour of the Okanagan, specifically stopping in at breweries and that. I actually extended and went over to Nelson as well. And I ended up going through Armstrong and made arrangements beforehand. And I went on a really nice tour of the Armstrong facility at Gambrinus. They took me around, showed me the whole facility, gave me a beautiful tour, gave me some swag, a hat and whatnot too. And I bought a bag of malt while I was there to take home with me because I'm a home brewer. And I would highly recommend it. It's very educational, and they're super nice people. The only part I wasn't a big fan of was the kiln, where they actually roast the grain afterwards. It was really hot in there.
Weird. So before we start, I'm just curious. Do you know what kind of the bees are pollinating? What kind of fruits and stuff like that?
I can tell you. I actually got asked that very question today.
Smart
I just got to look it up, but
tell you in a second. Well, we can get back to that.
Jordan's pretending he's some bee expert now that we've talked to Matt.
No, man, I got bees at work now. They came.
Oh, they came?
Yeah, I got
good.
I got the bees.
So nice. these are wildflower.
Okay.
Wildflower honey is what it is.
Okay, nice.
And then it's honey malt from Gambrinus.
Of course. So. This is very light in color for a brown. It's just on the lighter end of the scale for a brown ale for sure, which is probably good for most consumers.
I like
consumers.
The colors. Reminds me of like honey, just looking at the bottom of it, like when you see a nice jar.
Yeah, it's a little too dark to be an amber ale. I mean, it's definitely brownish.
I see a lot of honey browns, though, that are more this color than a true like,
you're probably
brown
right,
ale.
Yeah.
Same.
Nice and you've got the can over there. You can probably tell us the number on it. Then.
Awesome. 6%er.
It's got a little...
Damn.
It'll sneak up on you.
Oh, I don't mind that. I'm on transit again.
Got a nice grainy nose.
Yeah. I'm smelling the yeast and stuff too.
I can smell a bit of honey on the back too.
Definitely a little note of that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You get that real earthy,
yeasty
ale kind of thing going on. Just a hint of the roast and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can definitely get the roastiness.
A little bit bready.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of caramel and toffee.
Yep. It's always interesting when you have a honey beer, how every little, like you said, it's wildflower, so that's just going to give it a different taste when you get like well, Pitt Meadows is blueberries and stuff. It always gives it a different taste. So I don't think I've ever had wildflower honey in a...
In a beer?
Not in a beer, no. Well, not that I know. I don't ask all the time, I guess.
But well, you would think in most cases it's probably going to be since like clover I'm a bee honey expert now. Or something, right? But yeah. I think one of the best honeys I've had on its own is fireweed honey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've had my still my favorite is fresh blueberry bee really honey too, just out of Pitt Meadows. I know, what is it there? Maple Meadows has normally their first one they ever did was fresh right off after this blueberry season, and you could taste blueberry. It was crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice.
It is amazing just regionally how honeys taste different.
Yeah.
Just based on where the bees are doing.
You should try and get some cherry honey.
Ooh.
That would be interesting.
I remember hearing years ago there was one of the beekeepers went to one of his hives and was like, what the hell is going on? His honey was all kinds of weird colors.
Yeah.
Well, there was a plant for making like Skittles or M&Ms or whatever. And they had poured a whole bunch of like the really sugary candy water. And the bees just went for that and started taking it.
That's pretty cool.
Artificial color.
Rainbow. Oh, yeah. It was just like
rainbow beers.
This stuff's sweet. We're taking this. No work needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that would, this almost reminds me of like an English ale. With those earthy flavors and things like that.
I'm liking it more every sip I take, to be honest with you. At first, I was like that. I think it was just the honey and the malt together, but I could crush this. It's already going down really quick.
There's not many beers, Jordan, I don't think you can't crush.
I can drink your Imperial Stouts quite slow. I like to let them warm up. But yeah, you're true.
So Arlo's honey is up the hill from you.
Yep, just up, and they were just bought and moved. Oh. But one of the moved locations. I don't know how you move that many hives, but they moved there.
A few at a time.
Yep, away they go.
It's a good time of the year probably now that they're all going a little more dormant.
Yeah, I think you have to move them at night when they're all inside sleeping or something like that.
But one of the things we loved is the new owners right away wanted to keep that relationship, and they wanted to have their product and our product.
Well, so smart together. To collab like that.
I mean, we're really. We've been in Kelowna a long time. Between the three of us owners, this is our community. This is where we have, our families have grown up. This is, my one partner is down the street. I mean, he found the place. This little story on the barn was at one of my buddies that I grew up with in Medicine Hat. I'm a Southern Alberta boy, but I've been in Kelowna for 26 years. We were actually looking to start a couple other businesses that sort of fell through. And then our third partner came in after we were licking our wounds. He said, we've joked about craft beer for a long time. We love craft beer. Come down and see this barn that's right in my neighborhood. Because I think if we can get it, we should take the dive in. And we met there on August 22nd, and we looked at that place, and we thought, this could be a really cool experience. If we can get a brewer that sort of catches our vision. We had a designer friend just recently somebody posted, way to go, most Instagrammable brewery, because the loft shows very well.
Nice.
You got the open loft from a barn perspective with sort of a boho feel, and our designer friend had never done a commercial space, but kind of caught our vision for it. Wanted to kind of just feel like home, like you're coming to a little living room or community table with your family and friends, and so that's the feel we're waiting for you to experience.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like I can already know the place through Instagram from just people, like you guys reposting stories of people enjoying their time there. Like you can see the loft, you can see you got couches that are actually chill, like not just table space, but like relaxing things. And I see like people finding all the owls and stuff for that you guys got around the barn and stuff. So it seems like a very wicked, cool space.
Sounds like a hoot, right?
You'll be here all night.
Yeah.
So then none of the owners have like a home brewing background or liquor industry background?
No liquor industry background. We've tasted a lot of brews in our day.
Right.
Actually,
consumers.
All three of us actually had been home brewers, very small scale.
Of course. Five gallons or 3 gallons.
Yeah. And played around and lots of different kits.
Okay.
But
so you weren't going into it completely blind.
No, but we knew we were not the guys that are going to be sure. pumping it out. I can tell you that much. That we're, if we're going to win people over with a variety of beers, this was not. We joked today, if Colin goes down, we're in big trouble. But you know, I in talking with other breweries, that's the case too, especially smaller ones that have one main brewer.
Yeah.
My hometown, Medicine Hat, last year they lost their Hell's Basement. I don't know if you've heard of Hell's Basement. Cool little brewery in Medicine Hat. And their brewer walked, and they were left like...
Left in a bit of a lurch.
The owners were like, well, we have the recipes, and we sort of know how to use the equipment. Let's try to maintain. And then they got a young guy out of Olds College, I think, who's
perfect.
Who's killing it. They just won a couple awards, so they're,
doing well. I have some friends who came out of Olds. Our good friend Jason over
at
Mariner came through Olds.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. But it seems like it's a little easier to find brewers these days. You know, like 20 years ago, there was no local schools given the training in that one. Now we have SFU and KPU and all these different local places that are having students graduate every year now, right?
So, well, and I just think with the proliferation of breweries in general, I think most breweries are also training up other employees to be a part of that process.
So you got you
got a whole crew
of people. You get your packaging people and your cellaring people, and eventually they pick it up and learn how to brew and become
brewers. They want to be part of the process right away. We're one of our longest-standing taproom guys right now is he's a keener. He came from Ontario. He knew quite a bit about craft beer. He worked at, I think, Steamworks in the tap room there. And anyway, he's totally hopped in on helping with the brews and brings quite a bit of homebrew knowledge too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fun just to watch it grow and figure out what we're doing.
Cool.
But we feel like we often feel like we're in over our heads. I can tell you a year and whatever, 7 months into this, and we're like, it's been a amazing journey for us so far, even with COVID. Like we've been embraced by our community, and even the other breweries in town have just, you know, welcomed us.
You guys have a pretty good relationship. So I remember you came down just when the pandemic was starting and they were going to start opening things up again. And I believe you were saying that you guys got together, all the breweries got together and came up with a business plan to reopen all the breweries kind of at the same time.
Well, just before COVID broke, I'd being new guy in town and really wanted to get a feel for it, get to know everybody. And there has been so many new ones. I was like, I was naive enough to think there's probably, let's just get everybody in the same room. And apparently that the few that were around before that they'd tried it and it didn't go so well. But there was some conflicting agendas or whatever, but my agenda was just to keep up. What's your agenda? I just want to get everybody in the same room. Everybody's got our own. And how do we find a way to, I mean, Penticton has done an awesome job of really supporting one another.
Yeah.
And so it was a really good meeting in terms of people saw, you know what, we can all have our own clientele, we can all support, and we can all succeed. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to be better when we all
work
do
together.
Well.
Yeah.
Sure.
Than just trying to knife one another. And it was, it was right at then COVID broke, and we're looking at now a specific Kelowna Ale Trail kind of idea, because there's been so many new ones come, just to, you know, whether it's a passbook or whatever, just to encourage especially visitors to come and visit all of them.
Yeah. Mm.
Seems like that's where all the growth has been in the last couple of years, is not so much in Vancouver, but in smaller communities. Langley is kind of like the big upcoming area.
Yeah, and
Langley
is blowing up.
You know, Okanagan clearly has a lot of growth. And now we're seeing even breweries pop up in the smallest little towns across the province. It's pretty amazing.
Well, like you were saying, Penticton too, they do work really well. And they do that every year. They have the Penticton 7 that brew a beer together. And it's kind of like the whole town is kind of involved with it when it's released. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like seeing that stuff like that.
Yeah, same.
Doesn't hurt either that the Festival in Penticton, big festival, and all the breweries are so tied in with it that, you know, it's got a real, real community feel there for sure.
That's got to be a bit of a hole left by it not being happening this year.
Well, we were hopping in on our first two beer festivals. We were going to do Festival and we were going to do the Great Okanagan Beer Festival, and both, of course,
boom,
never happened.
Yeah, I was supposed to be a judge for that, and I think you were too, Warren, this year, and didn't happen.
It was disappointing. Yeah, they didn't ask me.
Understandable. Maybe next year.
Right?
If there's a next year.
Fingers crossed, man. I miss festivals.
Next festival, whatever that is.
Whenever that is. It will come back at some point.
Sometime,
Why don't we go back to the barn for a second? Like, what's capacity in the space right now?
Before.
Yeah. Well, before with the patio and the loft and the tasting room was 87 was their capacity. And now with the extra patio out back that they've given us, as mm-hmm. we're into the two handicap stalls out back, and we've sort of been able to expand the front patio a bit as well. Of course, that's going to be different for winter. But we're almost back to about 70. So we're...
Okay.
It's, you know...
What's your normal capacity?
The mass...
87?
It would have been 87.
Yeah. Okay, so you're not too far off.
No. But again, we're going to... We're not going to heat both patios, so right. we're going to lose the back patio, and then you're...
Yeah. Just need some troopers with parkas.
That's already going to be the case. And, although we're not... I saw some pubs in Winnipeg that they won't let them put sidewalls on their patio tents.
Oh.
And so they were still like, these people will be here. They are not going to be locked up in their houses for the winter. They will be here...
Getting frostbite.
Yeah, they won't care. They'll put on their people that go to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers game in December or November. Yeah. November, they're all bundled up in there.
Somehow their beer doesn't freeze.
Yeah,
they just drink it faster.
Yeah, that's right.
The alcohol content in there will keep it a slushy.
Yeah, exactly.
We've also paid more for plexiglass than we ever envisioned paying on anything.
Oh my god. if you can find plexiglass it's super expensive.
It's super expensive. And we were like, you know, when you are so intentional about the experience of the barn, to just go throw plexiglass and you're like, designer's like, are you serious? We're serious in selling beer and keeping people safe. So we're serious. But what we were able to do is take some of the original barn wood that was left over in the loft and we built frames around them. So there's sort of like framed windows hanging from the ceiling and
that's cool.
Sliders on the table. Trying to, you know, keep it as much as possible. Yeah. I was at camp yesterday, brewery, and they're talking about, again, they have those big long tables out on their patio.
Yeah.
And they've now got a big awning that's going to go over. But they're talking about how do we... Because if you just have a long table, of course, you can't put people beside each other.
Right.
So they were talking to us about how we built the slider so they can actually slide on the tables.
Little dividers.
Yeah, you can go two or four or, you know, sure. move them down the table. So I think most businesses are trying to be as creative as they can to keep as many people in their seats.
Yeah.
That slider is a pretty good idea, though. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, you know, that part didn't cost us anything because I got two partners that are good woodworkers. So
there you go.
Pretty involved.
So. Free labor is the best labor. It
it's going to be interesting, all the projects that come out of all this leftover plexiglass and this is all over.
Build a hockey rink or something.
Yeah. I think they're going to go into storage for the next one. Like, is this going to be, nobody's going to get rid of them. Well, I'm not so sure we're going to wait 100 years.
It might be sooner.
I don't know.
Never know with this government.
You know, you know, you get these 100 year storms that happen every 4 years now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, but if you look back, it wasn't too long ago when we had SARS and things like that.
This one's just
they happen. Yeah, well, this one's worse.
But. And there's just so much that's out of everyone's control, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You could lay awake every night. And some people do.
Oh, yeah.
Or you just say, okay, we got to do the best with what we got, and we'll flex and pivot and do whatever word you want to use to try to move stuff.
And have an extra beer.
Yeah, and have an extra beer.
There's some people out there who are germaphobes to begin with, and I can see them holding on to this and wearing their masks and their gloves for, you know, the next 10, 20 years just because it makes them feel safer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I just said this the other day. If you go, you know, rewind for all of us, rewind to January, February.
Yeah.
If someone would have told us where we were going to be at right now and this year, we would have lost a lot of money betting.
Like, I would have preferred a full lockdown and have it pretty much over by now.
That would be.
I would love New Zealand's way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Close the borders, get rid of it, open her back up. Something happens. Quick little lockdown, shut her down, everyone's good, and then reopen again.
Yeah.
But this dragging it out thing is going to be worse for the economy in the long run.
Unfortunately, our economy is so tied into another economy that...
Oh, yeah.
I am a little bit thankful that we don't have a lot of American tourists right now. I will say that.
Oh, thank God,
I'm glad
there's
the borders
been a few
closed.
That say they're going to Alaska and then go to Banff.
I was on a golf course about a month ago, and... My taproom girl phoned and she said, what do I do? I said, what do you mean? She said, there's a guy in here from, just give me a Hawaiian phone number.
Oh, no. How long has he been here?
Well, that's what I said. I said, first of all, he might just have a Hawaiian phone number.
Right.
He said, no, he's from Hawaii. He just told me he's from Hawaii. I said, well, ask him how long he's been
in
Canada.
Has he been here since March?
So he came to visit his parents. He'd been there. He'd been past his two-week quarantine. Yeah. He'd already done it. But just the fact that you got to ask the question, Eva, where are you from?
Oh. Yeah. Well, there's that list of questions we're asking people now, right? Yeah. And so when you say, have you traveled outside of the country in the last 30 days? And he goes, yep.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that throws everything off, right?
I see signs downtown on cars that literally Washington license plate says, my wife lives here, but we have Washington plates. Don't smash her windows, please.
People
can be dicks.
I got a lot of American friends, and I want them to stay over there for now.
Yeah, exactly.
Us
too. You can come back someday, but right now is probably not the good time to do it.
Jeez.
Come drink my beer maybe in a few months.
Yeah, exactly.
If it wasn't illegal, kick a can across the border, but that's illegal. You can't do that.
All right, let's go to the pale ale.
Let's do it.
My personal favorite since we opened. My go-to whenever, and you've had it.
It's good, Jordan, man. So. Yeah, it's good. I actually took that on a hike to Bridal Falls with my buddy, and me and him split it. And I actually climbed all the way up to the top, and I brought the Barn Owl glass with me too, I could really go all up for the photos. Yeah,
it was a great shot. Yeah. It was a really great shot. With the falls looked like it was crashing onto your head.
Oh, it was at one point. I think we washed our hair there for a few minutes.
Have to find this photo.
Oh yeah, I think there's about 10 on there because I took the kids up, my best friend, the dog. So it was a crew event.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, a good solid pale ale is important, I think. I've had pale ales from certain companies where it's just like it's the best to pair with food and that kind of thing. And if you can do a good pale ale and make it real versatile, then I think you got something, you know.
Yeah. So speaking of food, I don't believe you guys have a kitchen, but you guys are all over the food truck scene. I see... What is it? Mexico Monday tacos and a bunch of other stuff. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, food trucks is a good way to go.
In here.
Food trucks is a good way to go when you don't have a kitchen because it provides food for your people in your lounge and that, but it also takes it off your plate when you already have way too many things going
on. Well, when we looked at our space, I mean, our total space, this is everything. This is our brew space. This is a loft. This is 2,400.
Wow.
Okay. Square feet. It's a tiny space. We knew there was no way we're getting a kitchen in there.
Yeah.
So then you start thinking, what do we do for food? And being in a new commercial little sort of alleyway, not all of the neighbors, I'm going to say, were friendly about food trucks. To put it nicely, they didn't want to play nice. They didn't want that to be part of our model.
Really?
Yeah, no, it's curious. Now,
is weird because you'd think as somebody in a neighborhood where maybe there's not a lot of restaurants to begin with, you would see that as a plus. You'd be like, oh, I can just walk over to the food truck and grab something tonight instead of making dinner.
Right? Well, and as the biggest driver of traffic in this little commercial space, I mean, we are the largest building there and we are the busiest of all the businesses. You've got a jeweler, you've got a couple of hair studio, a little salon and a flower shop. You'd think the more traffic we could drive in there, it would help everybody. That was sort of our theory. Anyway, to be as kind as possible. They're warming up to the idea. But what we've had to do is we just thought what we can do is we've had people coming to us now and say, you know, we'll move our portable food in right into the loft. Like we'll bring tacos right to you.
Really?
We'll bring enchiladas right to you.
So, wow.
And now there's a new taco host right across the street. So they come over, they take the orders and they virtually...
catering situation.
They virtually run it across the street.
Well, that's cool.
Wow.
That's awesome, yeah.
And then from the beginning, our license allows for outside food. So...
Yep.
We have two awesome pizza restaurants right there. We have a sushi place across the street. People always, the number one question is like, we can bring in outside?
Yes, you can. Phone them, have them deliver it.
You can. I'll go get it for you if you want. Yeah. As long as you get to there. But we have a number of places now that have come to us and said, you know, we'll work with you.
Fantastic.
We like what you're doing. We have right now for the winter months, best ramen truck in.
Oh,
in,
I've seen that.
In, it's a little bowler trailer. Oh. So it actually, I don't have to ask my neighbors because it fits in our back parking lot.
Nice.
So we back it right in there. Awesome. And they bring their own following. We have had in the last 3 weekends more people come and sample our beer that have never been to the brewery.
Because they're following the food truck.
They're following the food truck.
That's amazing.
So it's been a great little partnership, wow. And they're there for 4 months. So.
How do you sign them permanently?
Well,
right?
we're talking. I mean, they're liking it too because they get a whole new vibe too and a new neighborhood.
Yeah.
And normally during these months, they shut down. The owner goes back to Tokyo. Well, that isn't happening.
Right. He's got nowhere to go.
So he's staying. So it's a win-win.
Amazing.
No.
So I'm looking at
what's your face?
Oh, I love this beer.
Oh.
Well, I'm just looking at it. I haven't tasted it yet, but I'm just looking at it, and this is incredibly bright and clear. Do you guys do any kind of filtering or anything like that? This is just finings, right?
Yep.
Amazing. It looks fantastic.
It looks a little more like English style, just on the coloring.
Oh, it smells a lot different than English style, though. Oh, yeah. It smells like Pacific Northwest pale ale.
It is.
But you know what I mean? Like,
it's a much more
golden color usually. Yeah. This is a lot more amber.
Oh, that's hop forward.
It's fantastic.
I haven't tasted it, but I can smell it.
So a lot of our IPA drinkers, they actually prefer this beer in our establishment. They choose this. It's a hoppy pale.
Is it ever. Wow.
5.5%.
It's kind of a mix. You get a little bit of the dank in there, but you get a lot of the bright notes. That is really nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is my personal go-to in my establishment. I mean, I like all of our beers, but this is one repeatedly I find myself going back to.
Mm-hmm.
And to be very honest, I mean, and one of the things the single vessel system people will tell you, a balanced IPA in those systems is very difficult to do.
Mm.
A consistent hop beer. This is the one that we have been able to he's mastered. Our IPAs, we've struggled with on occasion to get to that consistent, what do we want it to be? This beer we're extremely proud of. And like I said, IPA drinkers like it.
Yeah.
It's not too overbearing for those that don't like the hop, but it's got a good kick.
I can see this satisfying an IPA drinker. It's got that nice bitter finish. It's got all those hoppy notes that you're looking for in an IPA.
But it's also got like a fruity sweetness on it. Almost.
Yeah.
It's almost berry. Instead of like...
I caught that the other day for the first time. I was like, what? I'd never really caught that
before.
Yeah,
it's not like your orange. It's not your citrus. It's not your tropical. Right. It's more of a berry note.
That berry,
not overbearing,
fruity,
but
that fruitiness. Yeah, that reminds
couldn't tell you which
berries.
One.
It's kind of like that berry medley, though. That's like the three, like the raspberry, blueberry, strawberry mix you can buy in smoothies. It's kind of like that sweetness.
Just a little bit there.
Yeah, just in the back.
Yeah.
And the hops, like I said, it's a little bit of the dank, but it's not like all citrusy. It's a little floral and that as well.
Yeah, not super bitter at all.
That's a mosaic hop there that's coming through. Yep. And it's, we're just super proud of that beer. So,
that's nice. Yeah. It's really good. What's the percentage on this one?
It's 5.5.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
It comes in about...
Good for a paleo.
Just about 60, I think, on the IBUs. On the IBUs. That.
Probably a lot of later edition hops.
Yes, you can tell by the aroma.
Oh yeah, and just the lack of real bitterness.
Yeah.
I'm learning slowly with.
No, it's definitely got some bitterness in the finish, but it's not overpowering. It's not like smacking you around. That's damn good.
So you guys, in terms of your IPA likes, do you like when it just gives you the big kick at the end?
I'm depends funny because I like it both ways. I like a really nice balanced, good balance between the malt and the hops and stuff. Usually balance impresses me more. But that said, I have nothing bad to say about, say, a Fat Tug or something where it's, really hop forward. Yeah.
There's the other brewery in Medicine Hat is Medicine Hat Brewing Company. I think there's three now, but the other one that I've been to is Medicine Hat Brewing Company, and they boast one that's over 100. But that one, honestly... By the time you get it to here, you already know you're getting kicked in the nards. It's coming your way. Like it is, it's coming
your way. I've made home brews that are over 100 IBUs calculated.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is that once you start getting over 100 IBUs, the wort's not absorbing so all that bitterness.
Yeah.
It's reaching a saturation point.
Well, it's got
so,
it.
So at some point, you're just wasting hops.
Yeah.
Right? So you can call it 150 calculated all day long, but I guarantee if I take it to a lab and measure it, it's nowhere close.
Like for me, I think when it comes to like New England styles and everything, I want it to be that super like easy drinking, almost fairly sweet, not lactosey, but sweet, fruity. When it comes to West Coast, I still want that kick in the face.
Yeah. I'd smash.
I'm kind of over like the palate wreckers, as we always call them, but yeah. I like, I'm into those hype beers that you go out and get, like the Superfluxes and like Boombox and stuff like that. So I like a like, nice juicy one. Like I just had a, what is it, Baseline Dunks out of Boombox, and they just use mainly cryo hops. So it's like really smooth but juicy, and those are my style right now. But
you get any of that hop burn at the back of your throat?
No, because they added just a normal hop too, so it wasn't all cryo.
Yeah.
So that takes away from it, I find. But yeah, no, I like the juicier style ones mainly now. But yeah, I'll drink any IPA.
We know
it's me, man. Give me a fat tug.
Oh, it's a beer.
Yeah,
Jordan, every brewer's dream. Yeah. Hey, look who's coming in! It's Jordan.
He'll like anything. Yeah. He's like Mikey with Life cereal.
Oh, Mikey, like. Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a couple styles I'm not fans of. Like, I don't know, some.
Are you a Saison fan?
Not overly, but if it's a good, well-made Saison, then yeah, I'll do it. I just don't like when it's just like super peppery or like too much floral going on. But if it's well-balanced, then yeah, I'll try anything once, and if I don't like it, I just won't go back. Yeah.
That's one I find that I don't gravitate to.
Same with me. I won't pick it out. If I'm getting a flight and there's like a couple others, I'll be like, oh no, pale ale, IPA, sour,
so that's
something
funny.
Dark.
Last couple of years, I've been really into Saisons. Especially making them, but it's weird because I've had Saisons that I absolutely love, but I've also had Saisons that I could take or leave, right? So it depends on the beer itself and how it was made and that kind of thing.
100%.
For my Saisons, I like them really dry.
Really? That's your preference?
Oh, yeah.
I like my Saisons really infected with Brett. So.
Oh, yeah, you love your Brett, too.
I'm not a big fan of Brett.
I find they dry them out more and give that nice funk. I find Saisons are a little too sweet often for me.
Yeah, quite often they're too sweet, yeah. I prefer a little bit of tartness in there. If you're going to do a mixed fermentation, throw a little bit of lacto in there.
So when you talk about Brett, have you had Wild Ambition stuff at all from Kelowna?
Yeah, they're great, yeah.
So one of the things, I mean, they have such a tiny tasting room. There's a place that's, you know, they've had to find a way to do it. And there is not, I was just talking with them the other day, their hugest market is actually down here at the coast.
I believe it.
They're shipping down here.
Well, just to be an all wild ale place in a small city, you know, it's a niche. And it's in the middle of friggin' nowhere by the airport, which is not as busy as it used to be, I'm
that's
sure.
That's true.
The university is not as busy as it used to be.
That's true.
So there's a lot of people that aren't in that area anymore. So.
True enough.
Well, and you know, you had Boundary up there. Boundary, of course. Temporarily shut down now, at least.
No, Oliver sold Boundary, so it'll be something else. There's an English-style brewery or something?
It's Welton is the
Welton,
name of it.
Yeah.
It took over his brew space.
Yeah.
But Ollie really, he kept his license. He's brewing out at the farm.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got something up his sleeve. I'm not quite sure. He's always
He always does.
He always does.
I love Ollie.
Interesting.
But Welton and really focusing on the British style of brewing. But they're going to do a fish and chip place with their brewery.
It.
So it's going to be, that's what I love
Maybe
about this
make
industry.
Maybe they can make some malt vinegar too.
Oh, yeah.
That'll happen.
Is this combination of like, that's so different. They're going to be down in the brewery district, but they're going to fish and chips. That's their place. Or vice and virtue. You know, they got the smoked meat right in their place.
I know.
Place.
It smells so good.
How can
good
you
in
go
there?
Wrong with smoked meat?
And yeah, exactly.
Hello.
So, and how can you go wrong with bring in whatever food you want into my place? You can have whatever you want.
Yeah, that's the best.
I know a lot of the lounges will allow outside food, right? And maybe most people aren't aware of that. But yeah, I mean, if you have a favorite lounge that you go to in your neighborhood, check with them and see if outside food is allowed, because I bet you it is.
Yeah.
Basically, and then you can bring your own picnic lunch with you, right?
If they don't have their own kitchen, it's usually fair game.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, right after we opened, so that was the number one question for sure. Can we bring in our own food?
Yeah.
But there was one day I was like, somebody had sushi, somebody had pizza, somebody had tacos, somebody brought, this little senior couple came in with their little veal parmesan that they made a picnic basket. And then there was college students next door, and so they gave them their extra. It was
it
was so perfect.
Oh, my God, that's cool.
I was like, this is what we built this place for.
Yeah.
Come and have a beer. Eat whatever you'd want.
Absolutely.
Hang out and meet people.
Yeah, if you bring your own food, that just means you're going to be hanging out and drinking beer longer, right?
And we have there's a bakery, actually, right next door to us. It's actually, it was the original this farm, which we're in the barn, was an actual dairy farm in the 1920s.
Okay.
And the milk shed portion of the barn is now a bakery.
Cool.
And so we get our fresh pretzels and our cheese buns from the bakery every day, our little neighborhood partnership. We source out our pepperoni from a local smoke shop just and not too far away as well. We're nice. Very much about smoke, supporting all the local places.
Absolutely.
And the 1920s, it was a dairy farm. The 1930s, a railway was going in, and the farmhouse became the Ritz Diner for the railway workers. It's got a rich history. In the 30s and 40s, it became a brothel for those same railway workers. Not in the barn, just in the farmhouse.
Wow.
That's my story. It was an art studio for a while. It was a pottery. But it was falling down.
Yeah.
And the city wanted to preserve it. And okay. So... But preserving something to heritage standards is not cheap. And so they found a developer that was willing to move the farmhouse and the barn forward in the property to bring it to heritage standards and then lease it out. So
wow.
It's actually on city property, little known fact.
Really?
It
interesting.
Is city property, 75-year lease the developer has. He got a little strip mall of three different shops on the other side and could lease out all the businesses there. And But the city retains ownership of the land.
That's smart.
Does that mean
smart
a major game. Break on taxes?
Really? Really?
They no. do that in Pivato's too. We have the sushi house on the corner of Hoffman's Park is on city land, but it's a heritage building.
That's
and
right.
And they've moved a couple down into that area. It's right across the street from Fulmer's, actually. Yeah, that sushi joint there.
Yeah.
That's a heritage building that they've moved from back in the sticks on the other side of town. And actually, the same with them.
Really, eh?
The music studio right next door is also a heritage building that's been moved there as well. So
interesting.
Yeah, and it's all on city land, and it's at least out. It's the sushi house is hilarious because you walk through, and now you can see sprinklers cut in really crappily and like all these upgrades they've tried to
bring
do
up just to bring.
Yeah. Well, I think when things get a little better, I think you should do a series of historical beers for your barn there.
We've talked about
start
it.
Start out with like a milk stout or something for the dairy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what you do when you get to the brothel, but...
Just have a clever name.
Think of some ideas.
Yeah. It's got a history. It was art studio, pottery place. The pictures of them moving the barn was quite fantastic, actually, because it was almost falling down. They preserved as much of the original lumber as possible. If you look at our pictures of the loft itself, they went to great lengths to keep as much of that as possible. The city wanted them to drywall over the loft.
Because
fire safety. And the developer said, I will not do it. I'm not, I'll walk away, basically. And so they came to a deal. They came to a deal where, and if you look, when you're in our loft, you look at the fire suppression system at that place. It's probably 8 to 10 inches, the pipe running. If the water ever comes on in that place.
So you got an overkill sprinkler system.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That was the compromise.
Okay.
If you're not going to put in drywall and you want to leave it exposed, you will put in the biggest fire suppression system allowed.
Was lumber treated at all?
No.
Really?
Well, some of it is the original 1920 lumber.
Well, you think at least you could treat it with like a liquid.
I don't think so. I don't. Now, the insulation. Now, so then they sheeted it on the outside so we could insulate it before they put the shakes on the outside. That definitely had the insulation as fire.
Interesting.
Fire. But it's an interesting building.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you don't want to ruin the look, right?
Oh, it would have totally changed it.
Yeah.
There's no way you can preserve a barn and drywall over it.
That's why it's so Instagrammable, right? It's just that cool vibe. It's
something you don't see everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Next time you're there, take a huge picture of the sprinkler system.
I'll have a whole bunch of people looking at that now.
Yeah, that's my line of work. I'm always looking at
now
those
now you got
kind
me
things.
Thinking about Canoe. Have you ever been to Canoe in Victoria?
I have not been to Canoe in
Victoria. So it's a really big open place, and you can see all the rafters and all that kind of thing up in the ceiling. And I'm thinking they must have a crazy sprinkler system up in there too, because that's all part of the ambiance and the feel of the place.
If there's wood up there, for sure.
Yeah.
Or it was when they put it in, those rules weren't there.
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like B&A. You know, you've been to B&A.
Yeah, I love B&A.
So, I mean, it's it's the playground of breweries in Kelowna. So you got your bocce, you've got your bowling, you've got a great restaurant.
I actually just swung in there last time I was up to grab some beer to go. I hadn't even heard about that new little lounge they have off to the side.
New little tasting room they built. Oh, yeah? Yeah, there used to be a little motorcycle shop before. It was a little closet, basically. Yeah, that you couldn't. Which this has saved their butt too in terms of being able to, because in that old tasting room they could have maybe had three people sitting.
Well, probably right now one. But,
probably, but with their new tasting room, they've done a great job there too.
Yeah, and they got lucky because they take over the space up top, put a bowling alley in, take over now the bottom space and put a new tasting room in.
Yeah, and how many places do you know that actually, you know, they moved an Airstream trailer right into the. They cut a hole in the bricks. They moved an Airstream trailer.
I only know of one other place with a trailer in the tasting room. P49. Yeah.
But this was on the second story.
Not an Airstream, though.
So this is
second story.
Second story Airstream trailer.
Okay,
right?
That's a little more ambitious.
So you've not been one.
I haven't been up top yet.
You need to come to Kelowna. We need to take you for a tour.
I haven't been to Kelowna in probably 2-3 years at least.
Yeah, you need to come for a visit.
I was up 2 years ago, and it was closed when I went to go.
I also love the fact before they had that space with the bowling alley, and then. What was the bike shop? Yeah. They had pipes over top of that because they have a space next door across
that's true
where they're fermenting beer.
True pipeline. Line. True right.
So they pipeline over.
There's a couple of those at Brewer's Row.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
So fun.
Yep.
Cool. Should we get to this last one, guys?
Yeah,
that was really good. For all of those listening, if you're an IPA fan, pick up this pale ale. This was freaking
Don't
fantastic.
Give a hoot, pale ale. Yeah. This is one of the ones we are looking at doing a short bottle of this winter, as just some single bottles to be able to get out in the market and do.
So would Delicious. This be one of your core ones then, for sure?
This one never leaves. This one's there all the time.
Well, why don't you just tell us what your core ones are while we're talking about them?
Right off the bat, our Lakeshore Lager is, and I didn't bring that one, but it is by far... And it's the one that's been on most consistently. So, sure. But it is our number one seller. It's we still live in a neighborhood that's new to craft beer. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. They love to come in and have their lagers. The Kokanee drinkers, they love it.
We talk about them all the time.
Yeah. Lagers made a resurgence lately, though, too, with the craft drinkers. So it's
well,
it's
and it's and I really our it. Lager isn't just plain. It's got a little flavor to it. Yeah. It's I like it a lot, and people like it a lot. So Lakeshore Lager would be one. Raspberry Wheat Ale, which is very similar to Weiss and Virtue's Berliner Weiss, which is actually put them on the map in a lot of places. But our Raspberry Wheat Ale comes in at a whopping 6.3.
Wow.
Woo-hoo, so geez. For those that think they're just having a nice little fruity Wheat Ale, they quickly find
Prepare
out they're
yourself.
Not just having a fruity little... Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, that's fun. So that one's been on. Don't Give a Hoot's been on from the beginning. Arlo's Honey Brown has been on since the beginning. Will continue to be. And then his Nitro Stout. Our Nitro Stout, we can't take out. We can't take off. It's nice. There as a mainstay.
That's awesome. You guys have a Nitro on. I love when a brewery has a Nitro. A Nitro anything is just so something interesting.
We started early because he Colin loves dark beer, and he can like it's a good. I don't know if you had that one when you were there. I don't know if you had the Nitro.
I can't remember if I had the Nitro or not.
It is creamy.
Works nicely
creamy.
With stouts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's creamy. Yeah. It's Guinness-y, but it's flavorful. It's light. It's only 4. But,
oh, yeah.
So it's really nice beer. So that one stays on all the time, too. We also have a Porter, Night Owl Porter, that's very popular that doesn't go off either. And we barrel-aged it now as well. So we have a barrel-aged version of that.
So you have a Porter and a Stout year-round?
You do.
That's insane.
We do.
Usually it's one or the other.
Yeah.
Or not.
Well,
you have 15 taps?
We have 15 of our own. Then we also run a wine and cider off there as well. Yeah. So our vision was just to have 12 taps. So we had them split for growler lines and others. And it was like, okay, you keep making good beers that people want. We've got to unsplit the lines. We've got to create as many taps as we can. And we'll still pour growlers, just not off our CO2, but we'll still do it. So. Yeah.
It's pretty ballsy, too, to be for how small your batch sizes are and everything, to be doing a lager. It's not easy.
It's
got that right.
You know, it was our first brew, and I think it was... I'm not even sure why he chose that, but it was his first brew.
For the first brew, that's pretty ambitious.
It was our first brew, and it landed... And it was the first one we did in our test tank. It was the first one we did in our big tank.
That's funny.
And we have never stopped.
See, most breweries, my advice would be for your first brew, do like a smash. Yeah. Keep it simple and keep it a one-off. So if it doesn't turn out, you don't have to remake it again or anything, right? You know what I mean?
Make them one-offs until you like it and then name it.
Yeah.
We've learned that on a couple of them, for sure. But that was one that just stuck right from the beginning.
And he nailed it right off the bat?
Right off the bat.
That's
first
amazing.
First one. Never. It's never been off.
That is amazing.
It's been on every time. Huh. So it's that's kind of fun. But you know,
the only one I haven't tried.
Maybe
of course
it's that youthful naivety of I'm brewing it, I'm going.
Yeah,
going.
Why not?
So.
Well, you know, if you're going to do a lager right off the bat, might be a good time to do it. Well, you have tank space and you can leave it there and let it age, right?
Yeah.
Because once you get into production and you get into your cycle, then you might not have that tank space for 6 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, you got to figure out when to do it.
Yeah. So maybe it was genius.
A really good fortune.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems ambitious to me. I wouldn't do it.
No. But I mean, people know I wouldn't do it just because I don't like yellow fizzy lagers. So
well, that's why you haven't tried
person.
It.
See, exactly. Whereas that's why
when I go into a new brewery, especially if they've been around for 3 to 6 months at least, one of the things I will try right off the bat is their Pilsner or their lager. Because that tells you a whole lot about the brewer and about what they're up to. I mean, if you have a lager and it's terrible, chances are the rest of your beers aren't that great either.
Yeah, we you got me doing that, and we were at a brewery talking about this, and we tried it, and we're like, all right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we ain't name dropping, but you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I do. I think I know who you're talking about, too. And I don't think I've heard too many good opinions about them ever, but...
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So,
We're into the last one. But before I do that,
This is dark.
Yes.
This is dark.
Very dark.
This is chestnuts from just up the hill from us in a little chestnut farm.
Okay.
That our brewer picks up. He roasts them in his oven.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Like at home?
Oh, yep.
Okay.
And... Truly craft nano brewer. I mean, we weren't happy with our vanilla supplier. So Hector's Casa, which is the Mexican restaurant we've teamed up with that brings Mexican Monday to us. Ladies right from Mexico City, she said, I get you vanilla.
Oh, no kidding.
The good stuff.
And liters of it.
So she brought us real Mexican vanilla. We came in 2 boxes, and this is the first batch for this winter that you're going to taste right now.
Oh,
just
beauty.
Just went on tap last week, and... we've got enough to do chestnuts and vanilla to do at least 2 more batches of this.
So the base style is a porter, is that right? Or
of this? No, this is an ale.
This is just an ale.
Yeah, this is just an ale.
I mean, it's so dark; it looks like a stout.
It does. Yeah.
It's definitely nutty. Definitely vanilla on the nose.
The nose is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's not overpowering, but it's
I'm picking up just a bit of vanilla. I'm super sensitive to vanilla. I don't like a lot of vanilla in my beer, but this, from the aroma, I can tell that it's subdued and it's there just adding to things. It's not overpowering.
I don't think it's going to overpower you here when you take your sip. But.
Yeah,
and
no,
I can smell the nuttiness.
Definitely get the nuttiness.
I've had vanilla beers and it's just like, why? Like
those winter ales?
Yeah, which I don't drink.
Granville Island.
Yeah. Not saying any names.
We'll say that one.
So it's okay.
I can taste the vanilla in this.
I love Kevin, who does their small batch stuff, Kevin M's, but yeah, no, it's owned by Molson, so we can name drop.
Yeah, I can taste the vanilla in this, but yeah, it's not overdone. It's there adding to the roasted and the nuttiness and everything. It almost
reminds
me of a toasted marshmallow.
A little bit, yeah. Because I find I get the vanilla a little bit more up front, and then it's switching to that malty nuttiness.
Yeah. It's not all vanilla.
Yeah, no, I'll drink this. This is a campfire beer.
Well, and for me, this is a one. This is a one done at the end of the night. I have this, and I'll be done. But
it's not too sweet, though. I love that.
I would love this at a campfire.
It's totally
right.
And this time of year, last year on our patio, that was our campfire. That was our campfire beer. You'd sit around. Now we just need heaters. We don't need campfires. Somehow built a circus tent off there, and we need to have heaters.
And you got sides on your tent, too. That's a big go in this time.
Don't tell anybody.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I'm really digging this one.
It's just enough vanilla without going over the top. So it's sweet, but it's balanced. It's really easy to drink.
The more I sip it, the less of the vanilla I can pick up.
I'm wondering, though, if it's because it's vanilla from Mexico and not just like the shitty store-bought
stuff. Not just extract here.
Yeah. Or artificial. It probably helps out a lot in the flavor and
working vanillin
with the chestnuts.
Yeah. But I mean, some people just throw too much, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is the right amount because, like I said, I'm three sips into it now, and I can barely detect the vanilla now.
It backs off. That's what I found. I was waiting to see whether you said that, but for me, I get it off the nose right away.
Yep.
The first sip, it's like, and then it sort of settles.
And then it smooths out. Yeah. Now you can taste the malt and the other things in the background.
Yeah, I really like this a lot.
What's the percentage on this?
5.3.
Okay. 5.3. So all your beers are pretty drinkable. They're not too powerful.
Nope. The bourbon barrel aged stuff gets up there in the 7 and 8s.
You haven't done a barley wine or anything over 10?
No, he's talking about doing the barley wine this winter. So
barley wine is life.
That's your jam, is it?
Oh, yeah.
If he does it now, then it'll be aged and then released next year.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yeah, he knows he needs some time for that. But he is, you know, Colin's a smart guy. He's 25 years old. He's
a baby. Jeez.
he was tutored well at Swans, I will say. Like, he knew, but his science degree pays off in spades.
Yeah,
like
that'll help out a lot.
And he loves beer. He
must. That helps. Because he gave up money for beer.
He gave up
big time. I was going to say that earlier. I was like, he's going to be a doctor, but instead he got into brewing. I was like,
so he's taking a quarter of the pay. I hate money.
Oh, wait a minute. He told us that in order to stay as a brewer, he'd have to get paid the same money as a doctor.
Yeah, good luck with that.
No, he never said that.
No,
but he's. I mean, if you look at the fact that he's turning out in our year and a little bit, 26 different brews now that he's turned out in a small system.
Wow!
And seven of those are mainstays, and 15 taps regularly. Sometimes we're like,
cut out.
It's a beer management issue for sure in a small tank system. And our primary purpose really was to service our house. We've never flogged a keg, but anybody that comes to us locally, I think we're in 7 restaurants now.
Nice.
We'll try to provide them exactly what they want. But our number one, we really want people to come to the bar and experience the bar.
Sure. Yeah.
So, we thought the questions we're having owners meeting on Saturday. The questions we're asking at this owners meeting is like, we thought we'd be at 5 years before we'd ask that. Where's our next production facility? How are we going to tin? Even though this is COVID, what are we doing? Sort of thing. But to be at that spot, we just feel very fortunate that the community has embraced us.
Yeah. Well, I always laugh. A brewery, they plan for their opening and they've got all these tanks, and then the day they open, it's like, shit, we need more tanks. Mm-hmm. It's just like, we fucked up.
Yeah. Well, we knew going in, and especially in our space, it was going to be a problem. The other thing that was unique about us, the way the licensing works, as you guys know, often breweries open, especially of our size, unless they've been brewing off-site somewhere, they don't even have their own beer, or they have very limited portions of their own beer.
Yeah.
Well, our tanks were such that there's no in and out. Our tanks had to go in the day before our stairs went in, and I just said the other day, if we ever have to get these out of here,
the stairs are coming out first.
Yeah, the stairs have got to come out. The front walls got to come off. The front doors have come out. Like, they only fit in one way. So he said, these tanks will be good for a while. Okay, good, because that's a... But anyway, so once those tanks were in there, our only source of brewing, and we were new to the game, we weren't brewing somewhere else.
Right.
It's like, how do you open? Because you don't get an occupancy permit, basically. You're not getting a brewing permit, they all come together. And so our builder had such a relationship with the city that they actually gave us a variance that they would allow one occupant after building hours to brew.
Oh, I see.
Our first 7, we opened with 7 of our own brews, but he brewed during the night. He had to brew from when the workers left.
Non-construction hours.
Yeah, non-construction hours, because we had to be able to turn on all the fans and everything, be able to work it.
Wow.
Fire suppression really cool. had to go on. Wow. And so our opening day, we opened with 7 of our own brews, including the Night Owl Porter, which is because we named it because he was brewing the all night. Owl.
Makes
That's
sense.
Awesome.
And, when I talk to other breweries our size, they're like, how did you open with 7 of your own brews? How did you get
people? Yeah, we had a similar sort of situation, but the way our place is set up, the brewery's in the basement and the lounge is upstairs. So there's two separate areas.
Manufacturing area that you could manufacture.
Yeah. So even though it wasn't completely built out and finished at the time, they allowed us to brew before all the fire corridor was finished.
Yeah.
It was just sort of a handshake kind of agreement or whatever, where they said, yeah, okay, we'll give you, you know, a few days, a month or two or whatever it was to get figure your act out. Together.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's cool that at least the city's helped out and means someone kind of like want you guys to succeed.
Yeah. Well, and, of course, they're looking at tax income, right?
Well, some cities are, you know, well, we know the ones that are just shit and just try and fight you on every tooth and nail.
There's a good reason that Poco didn't have breweries for a long time, right? Yeah. And there's a good reason that Port Moody has lots of them.
There's a good reason that Burnaby has too.
Yeah.
Even though Burnaby's a great city.
I do have one question, and maybe it's not for the air, but I do wonder about Four Winds.
Yeah.
Oh.
Whatever happened with
that expansion thing out in Delta?
Why did they get shut down?
The city shut it down, and I got a funny feeling from what I read and everything. I got a funny feeling it was mostly people in that neighborhood that were fighting it.
Which is ridiculous.
But yeah, Four Winds actually really got lucky, because when COVID hit, if they were building that
they might have folded them.
It would have been terrible timing.
Yeah.
So now,
divine intervention.
Yeah, I've heard some talk in the background. They've got another spot that they're working on right now. Yeah. So it's coming.
I was there yesterday, and I'm surprised that they're, you know, with their tent in their parking lot, that people can actually carry their beer across the parking lot.
They have a
lot.
Picnic license for that tented area,
which is
so
really
you,
unique.
You have to. You can buy 4-packs in their tasting room and then take them out to their little picnic area.
Or you
area.
Can take. They give you a plastic cup, but you have to put a lid on it and carry it out. It's
they're
amazing.
Doing, quite they're strange. Doing it off tap now too, Warren.
Oh, is that right?
Just recently, they're doing it off tap.
Yeah, it was tap with a little plastic cup and a lid on it, and you can walk it across.
When I was there last, you had to buy off sales and take them out.
They told me about that, and they said, I don't know what changed, but for them, I think governments are trying to save businesses right now.
Yeah, they're being flexible.
They need to.
There's businesses failing all over the place. Like it just came out quietly that the Red Racer tap room in Vancouver is closed. The old Dick's location is gone.
I can tell you, though, historically, that particular location has always had problems. It seems that anybody who's moved into that actual location, they last about 10 years tops, and then they fold.
Well, right now,
even non-COVID times.
Right now, with there being no Whitecaps games or
Lions games,
that's what's killing them.
All the foot traffic. Because I took my buddy there. I was like, yo, there's Red Racer right here. We can go have an IPA, grab a quick burger, and jaunt to the thing. You're right by the Terry Fox Memorial. Walk straight in.
Yeah.
And without all that foot traffic, you're losing
that was what was
lot
keeping them in business the BC Lions games and the concerts and all that kind of stuff. Oh. So those not being there, I can see that being
killer.
A huge impact on the business. On
when the Lions seasons aren't canceled like this year, I'm a season ticket holder, and we'd either go to the Devil's Elbow or there. We would always go to one of those two places for food and beers before we went.
Yeah, well, you got the White Caps too, seasons canceled, right?
Yeah.
So that's like double foot traffic.
Yeah,
it's painful.
So many industry. Oh, it's just it's so related. It's not just one place. It's everywhere. Yeah.
House Sound no longer owns Devil's Elbow.
No,
they sold.
Oh,
it
I
off.
Thought that was a Tide House.
It was. It was.
Yeah. It was a while back they did that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm grateful to you guys. Thank you very much. I mean, I've listened to your podcast. To get the invite to be here tonight has been awesome.
Well, thanks for coming by, Gary.
Thanks for coming to us.
I personally haven't tried any of your beers, and I really appreciate you coming by because this has been very good.
I've been chirping to get you on for a couple months because I have tried your beers, and I know they are good, and the world needs to know.
Yeah. So thanks for coming.
Thank you very much. And you're invited anytime. We'll look after you when you come to Kelowna.
I've been trying to get to Kelowna for the last year or more. This COVID thing's making it really difficult.
It's only 4 hours.
You're absolutely right. And I'm thinking at some point during the next 12 months, I might just get stir crazy enough that I might grab Jordan and take off for 2 or 3 days. Grab a van or something that we can sleep in the back of.
We'll find you a place to stay.
Let me know when you do it because I'll just go to the in-laws. Yeah,
there you go. It could be I would love for you to do a copy or a version of this show from the loft.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of been our thing lately over this year of 2020. We've been doing a lot of on locations at breweries and talking with the brewers and stuff. So
Social Distance episode.
That sounds like a great proposition.
You could sit in Aunt Rosie's living room right around the fireplace. The couches from the 1920s from Chicago. Aunt Rosie happened to pass away on that couch. But we got the couch. And it's there. There's a whole story there.
Okay. Wow. We'll save that for the next podcast.
Haunted couch. Haunted couch. I love it.
All right. Cheers, boys. Thank
you. Cheers. Before we go out of here, What's the address of the brewery again?
It's at 4629 Lakeshore Road in Kelowna. That's right at the end before you head up the hill, right on the traffic circle. It's a big red barn. You can't miss it.
And do you know the social media accounts?
It is Barn Owl Brew is the Instagram account, Barn Owl Brewing on Facebook, and you can find us either way.
Yeah. One other thing before we do finish, you know I'm going to do it. Favorite beer of the night, guys.
Ah, yes, of course.
Warren, always you first.
Oh, man. That pale ale was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's easy, hands down for me. That was my fave.
What about you, Mike?
I think I would drink more of the pale ale, but this ale here, the what was it called again?
Chestnut and Vanilla.
Nutty Owl.
The Nutty Owl, yeah. I think that'd be probably my favorite, but I wouldn't drink as much of this sure.
Yeah, it's a little rich.
Hey, you good to go now, Gary?
People ask me all the time, what's your favorite beer your barn? I say I like them all, but I will go back repeatedly to the Don't Give a Hoot Pale Ale. It's my go-to for sure.
Okay, I'm pulling the same answer as Mike. Honestly, they were all really good. I mean, I really like the Cherry Sour too. That was but good, I gotta say the exact same thing. I love the Nutty Owl, but I wouldn't drink as much of it. But the Don't Give a Hoot Pale Ale is phenomenal, mm-hmm. And I would crush like two crowlers of that
easy.
Yeah. And that's just on the train home from work.
Right? I wish I got a walk after.
Awesome. Put a koozie on it so no one sees what it is.
A crowler koozie? That's a new thing.
Yeah. I have
that
one.
That is a new thing.
Are you serious?
Moody Ales used to sell them, I think it
that's
was.
That's right.
I don't know
that's
if they
right.
do
that's
still.
Hilarious. I knew they had the crowlers. I didn't know they had the koozies.
I don't know if they still do, but they did. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, right, thanks cheers. For coming awesome. Out, Gary. Appreciate it.
All right, so we better thank our Patreon.
Yeah, well, let's go. You can find us at pacificbeerchat.com. You can find us on social media at Pacific Beer Chat. And shout out to our Patreon supporters. If you want to support our show and help us make the show
please
better,
do.
Go to patreon.com/pacificbeerchat. So shout out to our supporters, Steve and Indie Beer Show. And Indie Beer Show is out of San Diego. And sooner than later, we'll have an episode that we did with them as a collaboration that'll be on our feed. So
you can check it out on YouTube
in.
Already.
Yes.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you to our sponsor, Ross Vanderhoek, with Royal LePage Wollstonecraft Real Estate. Check out www.rossvanderhoek.com for all your residential, commercial, new development, and investment property needs.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.